Hi, and welcome to the AA Grapevine. I'm your volunteer reader, Shelley Miller. Today, I will be reading from the July 2025 issue of the AA Grapevine. This is part 3 of 3 for the month. The articles we'll be covering in this section are all personal stories. Let's get started. Our first story is entitled Making Changes, and it was submitted by Carol G. in Bluebell, Pennsylvania, the deeper meaning and resonance of her sobriety. After 10 years as an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've come to realize how important my connection with God is to my sobriety and life in general. Each day I start with quick prayers, asking my higher power for strength to stay sober for the day and the willingness to seek and follow His will. I also pray the 3rd and 7th step prayers. I heard a woman share her story when I was new to AA, and this was her morning routine. She had something I wanted. I couldn't quite identify what it was, but my first thought was, I can pray like that. My quick prayer ritual has grown into a beautiful communion with God as I ride my bike in the mornings. I love this time of my day. It's quiet, dark, still, and I know God meets me there. My practice of prayer and meditation keeps me from being all tangled up in my head with nasty, angry, fighting thoughts. My husband put up with my drinking for at least 15 years. I'm not sure why he didn't leave me. Toward the end, I was a daily blackout drinker. My husband traveled a lot for business, and I was a stay-at-home drunk mom. Many nights, my mother-in-law was called to come over by my 9-year-old when I passed out. I hated my life, hated being a wife and mother, and felt like I had no purpose. There were many times I drove in a blackout with my kids in the car. My family pleaded with me to stop drinking. One time my daughter asked me to please stop, and I bent down, looked her in the eye, and I promised her that I would drink again, and I meant it. Until I drank again. The fear I felt when I woke in the mornings was a feeling I can't express in words. I'd promised myself that I wouldn't drink again, but by mid-afternoon, I already had the bottles hidden and watched the clock anxiously until I felt it was a normal time to have a drink. I didn't realize how powerless I was over alcohol. It had total control over me. I had my last drunk on February 18th, 2015, when my husband was out of town. I went to pick up my 9-year-old daughter from gymnastics, and I had been drinking since about 2 that afternoon. I picked her up early because her practice was really interfering with my need to drink. She was a competitive gymnast, so attendance at practice was required by the coaches. I insisted she had to leave, and my slurred speech and stumbling did not go unnoticed. My daughter was mortified and embarrassed. She called my husband and my mother-in-law and told them all about it. The next morning, my hands were shaking out of fear and the effect alcohol had on me. I simply couldn't get through that morning without a drink. After I dropped my 9- and 6-year-olds off at school, I went home and cleaned up all the bottles from the previous night. I had my last drink sitting in a parking lot, wine out of a red plastic cup. I was parked right next to the dumpster where I normally unloaded my trash bags of empties. I knew I was at the end. I was out of moves. I couldn't fight anymore. I know today that God's invitation to join Him was starting to leak into my soul. He was always there. I just couldn't hear Him. After an intervention by my husband and his family, still full of fear, I admitted myself to an alcohol treatment center, and the real miracle happened there. I had heard that spiritual experience that the Big Book talks about, a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. The first year of sobriety was really hard, though. But God met me again. I was desperate for just one sign that I was going to be all right. 3 months into sobriety, I had been crying off and on for days. So I started to say the St. Francis prayer over and over. God, make me a channel of your peace. Please make me a channel of your peace. I was sitting in my powder room, and through the tears, fear, and complete curse words, I begged for God's mercy. I finally felt a peace come over me. God touched my soul for a brief moment, and that was all I needed to move forward. I finally got the courage to ask a woman to be my sponsor. Her name is Marge, and she's still my sponsor today. She asked me to call her every day, and for some reason, I followed one of her suggestions. She encouraged me to make coffee and greet people at my home group, which introduced me to the concept of being in service and giving of myself. I let Marge take me through the steps. She walked me through with patience, kindness, all based on her experience. In my heart, I know God prepared me for each step along the way. I was sober for a year and a half, and I called Marge one night, and I was mad as heck. I said, I'm trying so hard to fix my defects of character, and it was not working. She just listened to me rant on and on until a calm feeling came over me. I said to her, when I don't try, things seem to happen. All she said was, precisely. That's when I realized I was humbly asking God to remove them. Now I'm no longer in control. I'm not the same woman I was. I know I've changed because the people in my life tell me. My in-laws see a difference. When a brother-in-law tells me that I've changed, it catches my attention and I'm filled with gratitude. I can't take credit though. God has blessed me with a new freedom and a new happiness, and the fear of people is slowly disappearing. As I grow in sobriety, the steps take on a new, richer, deeper meaning for me. I love my early morning bike rides with God. I ask Him to make me a channel of His peace to let me shine His light to others. A couple of years ago, while on a bike ride, I passed a man walking his dog. It was a dark morning, and he said, I see your light. I smiled and thanked God for blessing me with sobriety and a desire to grow with Him and to shine His light. I'm privileged to take other women through the steps today and to put their hand in mine and God's hand, just like Marge did for me. I'm just an instrument with a desire to walk humbly with Him. Life has taken on a new meaning for me, just like the Big Book says. To watch people grow and recover, to watch their fears and anger soften, and to watch their loneliness disappear is one of the most fulfilling parts of my life. Our next story is called Dream of a Lifetime, and it was submitted by John Kay of Carleton Place, Ontario. From the soaring Andes Mountains to the rainforest to the world's driest desert, he found wonder and AA fellowship at every turn. While I was drinking, all I wanted to do was escape from the world. As I began my journey through the steps and the fog started to clear, my sense of spiritual connection to everything around me deepened. I began to see a world of wonder and adventure. For me, this was another aspect of the promises coming true. In 1995, I took my first big sober trip to the AA International Convention in San Diego. What an incredible experience to be with sober people from all over the world. It was amazing to feel the sheer electricity of joining hands with 60,000 sober alcoholics saying the Serenity Prayer in the stadium, and to know that wherever I went in the world, I could find a safe harbor, that the hand of AA would be there. Since then, I've been privileged to travel and share sobriety in many faraway places, but one goal remained elusive, to ride my motorcycle to the tip of South America. This was a dream I had for 50 years, ever since I was a teenager. Alcoholism robbed me of that dream. Even in recovery, the realities of work and everyday life made it seem impossible. When I retired, my dream resurfaced. I was 65, but still healthy enough to throw my leg over my motorcycle and twist the throttle. My wife gave me her blessing, and my sponsor said it wasn't the craziest idea ever brought to him. The Pan American Highway stretches from Dead Horse, Alaska, on the Arctic Ocean, to Ushuaia, Argentina, the southernmost city in the world. I didn't ride the whole thing, but I did cover most of the South American portion, and the Fellowship of AA was with me the whole way. From the soaring snow-capped Andes Mountains to the rainforest to the world's driest desert, there was wonder and beauty at every turn. Along the way, I had great food, met warm-hearted people who went out of their way to help me. This was the incredible world I had sought to escape from so many years ago, and now I felt connected to all of it. Of course, there were also some challenges along the way. In my drinking days, I would have let those challenges defeat me. I probably wouldn't have driven 100 kilometers before giving up. But over the years, I've learned to take the words of the Serenity Prayer from mere recitation and put them into action when the going gets tough. I learned to accept the things I cannot change, custom agents, road conditions, weather. I learned to change the things I can, my attitude and my commitment to a spiritual way of life. And I learned about letting go, not just of resentments or old thinking, but also of expectations, plans, and schedules. in our chapter, How It Works, the phrase, the result was nil until we let go absolutely, has taken on a special significance. Letting go allowed me to be open to the unexpected opportunities on my trip. Thanks to online meeting, I was able to stay connected with my home group back in Canada every week. But I also made it a point to find local meetings wherever I could. The culture, food, clothes, and accents change from country to country, but the disease of alcoholism remained the same. I heard other people share about squandered opportunities, their loved ones they hurt, broken families, self-hatred, and jails and institutions. And the solution was just the same, the program of action contained in our steps and a connection with a power greater than ourselves. One of those AA meetings was particularly memorable. It was just before Christmas in a little town of Cerrillos in northwest Argentina. Just me and a fellow named Martin were there. 3 days a week, Martin opens a meeting in the local church, as he's been doing so for 12 years. Half the time, it's just him and his big book. Sometimes someone comes for a few weeks. A couple of people have gotten sober there and then moved away. Every few years, a wandering gringo like me shows up. Martin and I shared our stories with the help of a translator app on my phone. Lots of hand-waving and smiles. It was a really special evening, warm, intimate, and honest, in spite of the language barrier. The language of the heart always comes through. Next week, Martin will open the room again. Maybe someone will come, maybe not. I'm not sure if I'd have that kind of commitment. After 5 months, I finally reached Tierra del Fuego at the southernmost tip of Argentina. It was cold, windy, and wet, a somewhat desolate place only 1,000 kilometers from Antarctica. As I rode those final kilometers, I was thinking about the journey that had brought me to this remote corner of the world. It had been an inward journey as much as it was an outward one. It said that grace is an unmerited gift. I had received it in abundance. And then the most incredible thing happened. A rainbow appeared right in front of me. It faded, then brightened, for the whole last hour riding into Ushuaia. Call it a miracle, synchronicity, a moment of convergence. The mechanism doesn't really matter to me. It felt special, and that's what counts. I should be dead, in prison, or best case scenario, living under a bridge somewhere. But through the miracle of AA, I have been able to realize a dream I thought I had lost to my alcoholism. Instead, here I was, happy, joyous, and free at the end of the world. I stood there and shed a few tears of gratitude, or something like gratitude. I'm not sure there's a word for what I was feeling. I sat for a moment, trying to take it all in, trying to remember it with my heart rather than pixels. Then I got back on my motorcycle, eager for the next leg of my road to happy destiny. And our next story is entitled Letters of Hope from a Tribal Jail, submitted by Samantha W. on the Quinault Indian Nation, Washington. Thanks to the outside volunteers and Grapevine, an incarcerated woman in Washington celebrates a year of sobriety. The sun is shining today, but I'm not sure if there are any clouds or fog. I can't tell from my little rectangular window in my 8x10-foot cell. I won't know until I'm outside for my hour of recreation time. I'm currently locked up in a small tribal jail. There aren't many inmates in here. I'm the only female here so far. My release date is coming up. I've served 138 days now, but this is not my first time in jail. I got my first DUI in 2015 when I was 19, and that was when I learned about AA. At the time, I wasn't serious about getting sober. I couldn't wait to turn 21. I went to AA because I was court-ordered and to get my slip signed. I just hid in the back, not speaking unless spoken to. No way was I an alcoholic. I was just a girl with bad luck. After that, I stayed out of trouble for 2 years. Then I got my second DUI right after my little brother was killed. I still thought I wasn't an alcoholic. I just had a broken heart and bad luck. It always seemed like bad things were happening to me when I was drinking. My truck broke down, I couldn't save money, and most of my paychecks went to booze. I just liked to have a good time every night. Friends came and went, and so did relationships. My life was a constant roller coaster. It wasn't until my third DUI in 2021 that I thought maybe I should take my alcoholism seriously. This time, the judge ordered me to join a wellness court program. One of the requirements was to get a sponsor and go to AA meetings. They were online because of COVID-19. I attended some meetings but never did any step work, and my sponsor rarely checked on me. But it was enough to convince the judge. I still struggled with the relapse here and there, but for a while I was happy and sober. I got a great job working at a behavior health program at a clinic on our reservation, and not long after I became pregnant with my second son. Soon marital issues arose and depression kicked in. I was trying to balance work and my firstborn, who was a toddler at the time. After my baby girl was born, it didn't take me long to find reasons to drink again. This time I was filled with guilt about drinking. I didn't want anyone to see me buying liquor, so I wouldn't hide the bottles in my shopping cart and make sure I didn't recognize any vehicles before I went in. Living on the reservation, we all know each other's cars. I would also drive to a remote store so far away that no one would recognize me. On my last relapse, I binge drank for nearly 60 days straight. I couldn't get out of bed without a morning beer. My family wanted to take my kids. I quit my job and fought with people who loved me the most. I didn't have a care in the world about my health. I knew I needed help, but I was too ashamed to ask for it. Labor Day weekend, 2022, I got my fourth DUI, but this time I had my three-month-old daughter in the car. She was taken away in an ambulance, unharmed but alone, while I was taken straight to jail. The next few days were a blur while I detoxed in jail. Filled with so much shame, I could barely live with myself. I finally started praying for forgiveness. I had put my child in harm's way. I've never been one to pray every day or attend church regularly. Truthfully, I hadn't been to church since I was a little girl. I used to attend Shaker Church with my grandmother. Shaker Church is a Native American church that practices Christianity. I'm thankful for my elders teaching me about this part of our culture, because even though my days ahead seemed dark, I knew I still had a chance with my higher power. I went to inpatient treatment in Eastern Washington on the Colville Indian Reservation and was reintroduced to AA. This time I knew that working the steps was important, and I was all in, 100%. I dusted off an old Bible that was gifted to me by a counselor after I got my first DUI and took it back to treatment with me. I read daily devotions and prayers and kept a gratitude journal. My new counselor at the treatment center gave me a big book, and I carried it with me everywhere I went. I spent 7 months there. They hosted one AA meeting, sometimes twice a week. I've always appreciated hearing people's stories. They help me know that I'm not alone. They wash away isolation and fear and help me feel again. Not long after I completed treatment, I reported to jail to begin my sentencing. A few weeks after I got here, AA volunteers showed up to host meetings for us. What a blessing. I turned 28 years old in here recently, and even though it wasn't much of a celebration, I got my first full year of sobriety in here too. Thanks to the AA volunteers who bring Grapevine magazines in with them every visit. I had never heard of Grapevine, but I'm so grateful for all the stories members write. I've been locked up alone most of the time, so reading someone's real life story is a saving grace. The stories help me not stay stuck in my own head. They help me see there's a light at the end of my tunnel too. When I saw that I could write my own story for Grapevine, I got inspired and wrote this. Even though I'm incarcerated, I figure this is a small way I can be of service to my fellow brothers and sisters of AA, to share my story, my trial, and errors. We can stay sober, help others, and learn to forgive ourselves. It's the best advice I can give today. This next story is entitled Field of Dreams, sent in by Edward N. of Rock River, Ohio. He was just heading home after another long drunken day, and he had no idea his life was about to change. One night in August 1990, after an all-day drinking fest at the home of my next-door neighbor, my life changed. As I staggered home, I had no idea that the most significant journey of my life would begin with that short walk from their backyard to mine. Once I crossed into my yard, just like the character Moonlight Graham crossing the baseline in the film Field of Dreams, my life would change forever. I would never go back to the drunken lifestyle I had known. As I stepped across the property line, I made a decision. I would quit drinking. I was done with my embarrassing behavior, done with running my mouth, done with knowing everything, done vomiting regularly, and living with tremendous hangovers. It was a moment of clarity. My journey after that day, however, was not so smooth. I stopped drinking but didn't attend AA for 11 months. That was my long dry period. Once the alcohol was gone, I physically felt better immediately. To me, my problem was cured. I didn't understand until much later that my rage, anger, and feelings of not fitting in were an even bigger piece of my problem. I still had my mental baggage with me. I had stopped drinking, but that was all I had done. I was filled with so much anxiety and restlessness, and I was definitely irritable and discontent. After those painful 11 months, I met a professor named Caroline, to whom I told my story through a sappy, woe-is-me paper I wrote for her college class. After reading my paper, she outed herself as a member of AA and told me that perhaps I needed to go to an AA meeting. "But I don't drink," I said. "Trust me," was her reply, and she directed me to a meeting called River Men's Discussion on Wednesday nights. As I walked into that meeting on a hot July evening, my pack was weighted with my bruised ego, fear, resentments, and plenty of shortcomings. The first face I saw as I walked into the room was Greg, a guy who lived down the street from me when we grew up. He greeted me with a big smile, a handshake, and a warm, "Hello there, young man." I immediately felt at ease. I figured if it was okay for him to do this, it would certainly be okay for me. A guy named John was the chair that night, and in front of everyone, he asked me, "What brings you here?" I replied that I was tired of being a jerk, though I actually used a stronger, less acceptable noun to describe myself. "Good," he replied, "keep coming back." So I kept coming back. I soon added other meetings, like the gazebo meeting, River Tuesday there. There's a solution meeting, Saturday Good Stuff, and It's Up to You, subtitled Monday Night Raw. Along the way, I met people like John T., Penny D., Ned C., Maggie D., Father Jim L., and Jeff T. I went to breakfast and ball games with them and began having fun again. I worked the steps, and the steps worked me. They worked me over good. I met my character defects and shortcomings head on and realized they are me. I've turned them over, sometimes repeatedly, to my higher power, and I continue to evaluate myself as I move through my days. 13 years along the path, my wife Ann joined the program too, and we have walked sober together ever since. I've sponsored a great many men, and some are even sober today. I've lost friends, family, and sponsees to this disease, many more than I care to list. I continue to walk the path shown to me by so many people. This past fall, at a beginner's meeting, I heard a young woman say, "I'm here because someone decided to work their 12th step." I'd never heard that before, and it's stuck with me ever since. The pack I carry is considerably lighter these days, and it contains tools given me by AA. The steps, gratitude, willingness, serenity, sobriety, the list is almost endless. Today, the journey continues. Like they say, it's just one foot in front of the other. And we're going to wrap it up with one entitled Through Sober Eyes by Rob G. of Marmora, New Jersey. He wanted to see what the world looked like without liquor. 35 years ago, he got his wish. On October 1987, I was 23 years old, unemployed and suffering from pancreatitis. I had just wrecked another car. I couldn't seem to get a single day sober. I so wanted to see through sober eyes, but couldn't even get through a morning without a drink. It was my last car wreck due to drinking, but it wasn't my last day drunk. While home alone recovering from my injuries, I was still drinking all day and passing out at night. I wondered how on earth other people viewed life through sober eyes. When my girlfriend saw how much I was drinking, she called AA for a meeting location. I've tried to take credit since then for making the call, but she was the one who dialed the number. The meeting was in the basement of a church in the center of town where I summered as a child. I went to the meeting drunk that day for fear of who or what I would find there. Surprisingly, an old drinking buddy welcomed me to the meeting. We had worked and partied together in a local tennis club restaurant. I didn't know it then, but he was actually chairing the meeting. That day, he told me something I'll never forget. "Rob, someday you'll be able to come to these meetings without having to drink. In the meantime, grab a cookie, sit down, and listen." I have no clue what else was said that day, except the chef we had worked with was also in the room. After going to a few meetings, I began to show up sober and was able to put a few weeks of sobriety together. My old drinking buddy was right. I really could come to meetings sober. That's about the only AA suggestion I took at the time. People at the meetings told me, if you're not a lion tamer, don't go into the lion's den. I didn't listen. Instead, I went to visit my family for the Christmas holidays. Before I left, my girlfriend said that if I drank, I should lose her phone number. Well, I got drunk with my family on Christmas Eve and called my girlfriend to help celebrate the holiday. She could tell immediately that things weren't so merry. When I got home, I sobered up. Fortunately, we continued to date. Several years later, she and I were sitting in a pizzeria with our newborn son when that old drinking buddy from my first meeting came up to us with a drink in a hand and asked how I was doing. I said I was sober, had a sponsor, and was still going to meetings, but he didn't sound like he was doing so good. He wished me well and left. I've been seeing through sober eyes now for more than 35 years, and I have been married for more than 31 of those to the same beautiful woman who called AA for me. None of our four adult children have ever seen me take a drink. I've attended thousands of meetings in church basements and have never felt lost and drunk again. Thank you, my old drinking buddy. Wherever you are, I hope you're sober and well today. And that's all the time we have today for the AA Grapevine. You've been listening to the July 2025 issue of the AA Grapevine, and this has been part 3 of 3. Thank you for listening. My name is Shelley Miller, and I've been your volunteer reader. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.